Hi, my name's Teresa Cottam and I'm the Chief Analyst here at Omnisperience. In this issue of our Omnizine, March 2020, I'm going to be talking to Jake Levant from Lytico about some of the challenges and opportunities he has seen during the COVID-19 crisis in terms of delivering a fully digital experience and meeting the evolving expectations of customers. I'm also going to be talking to AJ Nash from Anomaly, and AJ is going to share with us some of the data and information and insights that his company have over the evolving security challenges during the crisis. And finally, I'm going to talk to Dima Alkin and Thomas Neubauer from Teoco, who are going to talk to us about network level issues and insights, and also about how innovation can help us cope with the crisis. But first off, Kevin Bailey, our MD, and myself are going to share with you some of our insights here at Omnisperience about the crisis and the impact on telecom service providers and other ICT providers.
So as we know, coronavirus continues to have an incredible impact on our society, our business, and upon the tech industry. Networks have been challenged by massive increases in home working, by people substituting social activities for digital products due to self-isolation and lockdown, and businesses redimensioning their product as people buy new peripherals and licenses. Here at Omnisperience, we're continuing business as usual and following our government's directive for social distancing and working from home. But just in the other day, I managed to catch up with Teresa, our chief analyst, to find out what she thinks about the impact on telecoms firms. Hi, Teresa. How do you think that telecoms firms are coping with everything that's going on today?
Well, hi, Kevin, from my social isolation over here. I think on the whole, the telecoms firms are coping very well in extreme circumstances. We did have a little bit of a blip early on when we had some problems with the networks, but on the whole, the networks are keeping people connected and they're doing their job. I think one of the problems that we have in the industry, though, is we have a tendency to almost underplay what we're doing. And you've seen a lot of telecoms firms saying, there's nothing to see here, everything is good. You know, we've got loads of capacity on our network still. No one's got to worry about anything. However, individual customers and perhaps large numbers of customers are experiencing poorer quality of service and quality of experience than they expect or than they used to. You know, and that's quite understandable given what's being thrown at our networks. I think that telecoms firms are missing a trick here. I think that they should be explaining that while they're going to do everything humanly possible to keep the networks working and to keep us connected, it actually involves a lot of work to do that. They are understaffed as well. They have staff that's gone off sick, call centres, their engineers, etc. So although they have a lot of automation, they are reliant on staff and they are, like every other industry, you know, experiencing a proportion of those staff going home. I think we need to be honest with our customers and be saying, reassuring them and saying, yes, we are working night and day, but don't underplay the hard work that our staff are doing to actually keep everything going. Educate them, let them understand that it does take a lot of effort. They may have to queue for longer, in call centre queues. They may have to wait slightly longer than normal for an engineer to come out. There are things that they could be doing to help us to maintain quality of service on the networks. Very simple things to reduce the burden on the networks. And I think it's really important that we have an honest dialogue with our customers and we don't just try to, you know, smooth over things as though everything's fine, we've got it under control, you know, there's no problems. And I think we should be communicating with them honestly.
Well, that's interesting. And I think that we always try to look at the positives in what we're doing. But what do you think are the next set of challenges are going to be for our industry?
I think it's going to be in lots of different places. I do think that, you know, if we take the really obvious thing, which is the networks, I think that they are going to do a fantastic job, and I think they're going to adapt to the new patterns of traffic very quickly. I think our engineers are on that, and I think they're good. You know, they need a little bit of time to do it. It will take a few weeks for them to get fully in control and where they want to be, but I'm fully confident that our engineers are going to do that and to adapt. I think there's another issue there that is things are going to go wrong. Inevitably, that even though we work at 5 nines reliability typically in telecoms, we're now working in a more IP world. There's more things that can go wrong. And the whole country is entirely reliant on its network. So when things do go wrong, there's a lot more stress there than there would be normally. And fault management is going to come up as a big issue. A lot of telecoms operators are putting technology to help them predict faults, to actually pinpoint faults far faster, and where possible to automate the healing of faults as well. Where it does require an engineer to go out, I think, you know, we could be impacted by our staff being ill or, you know, self-isolating, and so that's going to be a big challenge for us. And the trick here is, again, how we communicate those issues to our customers. We need to prioritize the faults to be fixed. And we need to make sure that we are honestly communicating with our customers to minimise their stress and to minimise complaints and problems that we might have. I mean, they're going to ring the call centres is going to be the next thing if they have a problem. So we know that a lot of call centres are outsourced and they might be in countries that have been locked down, like India, for example. But even where they're in this country, staff might have been sent home, they might be in lockdown. Now, a lot of call centre operators have technology that enables people to work from home. And that's been a trend for quite a few years. And thank goodness that they do have that capability. It means that ordinary office staff that can't work in the office at the moment could potentially be picking up the phone and providing a little bit of support to customers as well. So you could see them redeploying staff from jobs that aren't needed so much at the moment to the front line to help with the support. But they do need to think about deflecting as much traffic as possible from the call centres, and in order that the call centres can cope. So deflecting the traffic from call centres is not about frustrating the customers. It's about actually helping everything to cope. We could deploy technology such as AIs. You know, a lot of telecoms operators have started to invest in those kind of things in order to assist with frequently asked questions, to explain to customers about faults that have been pinpointed, that, you know, that the engineers are on it, that they're trying to fix it, you know, to take some of the burden off the call centre staff. Another thing that they need to do is be very clear in how they communicate with their customers and to make sure that they're anticipating some of the things that typically drive traffic to call centres. Now, one of those and another of those pain points that's going to be coming up is the bill. So we're just about to send out another load of bills to our customers, and clearly there will be people who cannot pay. They've lost their jobs, they've lost their income, they're struggling to pay, they may not be able to get to the bank and get money to pay their bills, etc. So that has the potential to drive a lot of traffic to call centres unnecessarily. We need to figure out what is our policy around those customers. And then once we have decided on a policy, make sure that we're communicating with them ahead of times early as to what we want them to do. And if we can use our bills as the communication tools that they really are, to be very clear about what we've put in place for our customers to help them cope. In some cases, the telcos are being extremely generous. They're lifting, for example, usage caps on their packages so that people don't run out of data. And that's fantastic. But you need to make sure that you're communicating that kind of thing to your customers as well. So we have lots of mechanisms that we can use for that, one of which is the bill. We've also got the capability to text our customers and to inform them of what we're doing for them. So we need to make sure that we're reaching out, that we're being proactive, that we're keeping them informed of what we're doing to help them, what avenues we have for them to, you know, to deal with us. So if they can't pay their bill, what do we expect from them? How do we expect them to communicate with us? What are we going to do for them? So I think that's really, really important as well. So the other thing that they need to think about is to do with onboarding and people wanting to make changes to the service they already have. And you mentioned that in the introduction, Kevin. And often what happens is people or companies will buy a product and then they'll just keep using it for a long period of time with minimal changes. And we've been talking a lot about things like, you know, the situation of self-provisioning of people, of dynamically changing projects far more so that they keep in line with demand of a business or of an individual customer. What we're going to see is all of a sudden lots of people wanting to buy lots of things from us or make changes to the services they have. And on the one hand, that's really good, but we need to make sure we're not frustrating them, that they're able to make those changes. And there are problems there. Often in our processes, part of the process of actually buying and making changes to products involves physical steps. And you're going to hear Jake Levant from Lytico, who's going to talk about what they're seeing and how they can create a fully digital experience which will streamline that. And again, take some of the pressure off the call centres, which is really, really important. Okay, Kevin, so let me throw this back at you. So clearly the bad guys haven't stopped being bad just because of coronavirus. And I think later in the pod scene, we're going to hear from the guys at Anomaly who are actually seeing a ramping up of threats, and they're going to talk about what they're seeing and the kind of information they're sharing with the community. What do you think is happening out there? And what do you think telecom service providers and other ICT companies should be doing given the importance of business continuity at the moment?
Totally agree. As you say, the COVID-19 disruption has provided an opportunity for cyber criminals and scammers to exploit our networks. And that's whether that's digital or voice, to prey on every individual's level of vulnerability and hope at the moment. We must understand that criminals have no conscience at all during disruptive times. And as you mentioned, and the guys from Anomaly will talk about, is that they are scaling up their scheming, as I call it. So let's prioritize this and prioritize it to the individual, the employee or the citizen and their data. Everyone will be engaged over the next few months, if they've not already, with various types of attacks, whether those are email phishing attacks, text messages with smishing attacks, telephone calls from scammers and data theft as well. So what I believe people need to do is, before you respond to anything, remember you've got time at the moment available. So your key priority should be step back, pause, think and ask yourself why. If you think about it from an email viewpoint, being bored, as many of us are at different times during the day, should not mean an excuse of opening your emails. So things like valid communications from banks, online shops, government will be something you're used to receiving. Maybe not the latter on the government side, but we've been seeing those appearing and in a format that you're used to. So if you see an email and you're in doubt about it, step back, pause, think and ask yourself, why would they be asking for this and offering me this? They've never done it before. Don't click on any links or open attachments that they put into an email. That's what the criminal wants you to do. By doing that, it lets them into your device or it redirects you to a cloned website that wants your money, your data, or both. Text and SMS is just another form of email attacks, but they're using your mobile device instead. If in doubt and the message appears to come from someone you know, come out of the text or SMS system that you're in and you're querying and send them a message from your contact list, not from the link that's come through. That way you'll be able to verify whether or not that communication is valid. Now, telephone calls from scammers making out that they are Amazon or Apple or Microsoft or your cable company, they know you've got a virus on your computer, or they're telling you that Amazon is going to start taking money from your account, or you need to have an insurance policy for your cable box. They're all doing the rounds at the moment. Remember, a professional company will not be offended when you step back, pause and ask them why they're ringing you now, or politely say to them no and put the phone down. If they're real, then notify you this of anything important with a physical letter. The last bit is from what I call network abuse, covers online communities. These are things like apps and possible data theft. So let me use House Party as an example of this. It's the type of app growth that we've seen due to the direct influence of the social distancing we've been asked to follow. So this company, and by the way, House Party's been out since around 2015, so it's not new. They've gone from like 150,000 or so subscribers in February to over 2 million in the last month. Things like House Party, the Zoom systems that are out there, online conferencing, the social apps. If you're going to use them, then stay safe. These apps are easy prey for criminals. They can get at you and your friends because you're all linked up together and you've all joined your personal data. So remember to use strong passwords. Use multiple types of authentication to get you into the access system. Don't share a future meeting with your friends on the open system that is there, because anyone can come and join. And we've seen examples of that happening with not only personal side, but business. And remember, I only share the data you're happy to share if you were face to face. It's all common sense. Yes, House Party has seen a rise in accusations that they've been hacked, i.e. people's data has been breached by going onto this app. But I can't see any evidence of this. And in fact, House Party's put up a bounty of $1 million for people to provide the evidence. They're just tweets and messages. They could come from their competition. So step back, pause and think, and then be controlled in what you do so that you remain secure as an individual. So coming back to you, Teresa, what do you think the impact of the changes that people are seeing today through not only the experience that they're having to endure at the moment and the way businesses and individuals are adapting to these changes, what impact do you think this will have in the long term?
I think there's two things here. I think the first is that it's going to accelerate some trends that we'd already seen and anticipated. So the adoption of digital technologies, and we forecast it was going to be at a certain rate and in a certain way. And I think that what we're going to see is that pace is going to pick up. I think it's going to show where there are gaps in the digital experience, and there's going to be a lot of infilling that needs to go on to actually create a more automated and more digital experience for people. I think that there are opportunities here to recreate things. I think after the crisis is over, people are going to go back and start to think about in entire industries, the way that industry operates. So there is a tendency to just bolt on technology to an existing way of doing things. And a good example of this would be the education sector. And we've all got our kids home from school at the moment, and we know what fun that is. And what it's made us realise is that there is very little business continuity planning in education. Fundamentally, education is the same as it was in Victorian times. You know, you go to a physical building, you all sit in a classroom, the teacher says things to you, you write things down with papers and pens in books, you take it home at a certain time, you study at home. And I think we're going to start to question whether transporting millions of children to a physical location at 8:30 a.m. every morning when they're still half asleep, and then, you know, transporting them home again, whether this is even the right way to do things anymore. And when we've applied technology to schools, when we think about it, yes, we may have given them devices such as laptops, etc. We may have introduced things like coding into the curriculum, but we fundamentally haven't changed the way we teach children and what we teach them and how we teach them. So all of those school buildings, very, very expensive buildings that we've outfitted and that we have to maintain and we have to light and heat, etc., are empty for most of the time. And is that actually an efficient use of a country's resources? We know that every winter in the UK, kids will get sent home probably for a week when it snows at some point, or there's a flood and they have to go home. And parents have had to sort of suck that up. But what coronavirus has shown us is there really isn't much business continuity going on there. It's very difficult for a lot of teachers to continue to teach their children. And in other countries, this is not the case. They've adopted things like digital classroom technology and they're reverting to that. So particularly in places like Australia, where there might be very remote communities, it's been normal for a long time that children can be taught remotely, and it's done very successfully. So I think we're going to have to really think about how we deliver services, how we personalise them, the way that we deliver those services, is it still efficient, is it still appropriate? Even down to things like, you know, in the schools, it's things like the examinations, which have been a bit of disaster this year. And you've got people like just coming out and saying, for the higher education sector, certainly saying, there is a more digital way of doing this, and we could be doing this slightly differently, which would make things a little bit more robust. For the telecoms industry in general, it should be good news, because the demand for our services is going to be high and will continue to be high afterwards. But not homogeneously. There will be parts of the industry where there could be problems. So, for example, will people still, they may still want services, but will they have the money to pay for those services? And they're going to have to prioritise where they spend their money. They're going to have bills that they need to pay, debts or loans that they need to pay off. So discretionary spending is going to be under a lot of pressure. And that means things like handsets. People are going to maybe hold on to them for longer. That's going to be bad for handset manufacturers, obviously, but the reason it's going to be bad for the wider industry is we need them to invest in things like 5G handsets in order to access 5G services. So the industry is going to have a long look at itself and say, are the business imperatives still there to actually continue to invest in 5G? Will people adopt 5G and start spending money on it and using it? Or is coronavirus actually going to slow the uptake of 5G and therefore undermine the business case even more? So I think coronavirus is going to highlight a lot of weaknesses in our digital infrastructures and in our businesses. And I think we're going to have to review how we're doing things and do a post-mortem and say, what do we do well and what could we do better? And I think that's a wholly healthy thing, don't you, Kevin?
Yeah, when I look at it from a security aspect, I think that businesses, whether they're the telco providers or other industries, need to focus more on the individual and protecting them. And I know that they can do this by using newer and what I term as less follow the pack technology that is, you know, is available and is proven, that moves away from depending on the user to be alert to attacks and security issues, for which many, it's not their core capability. I believe that individuals coming out of this will be more concerned and more aware and want to know about how their data is being used. And this has highlighted an opportunity, I think, for application providers to be more transparent about it and how they secure the individual's data and what they do with it. It's going to increase the confidence from a user's perspective of the provider, and actually could create a longer term engagement with them, because the user would be less susceptible to moving away and going to a different platform. I think the final point on this, from a security perspective, is if we think about the way that governments are addressing the COVID-19 issue, they are using explicit data points. Everybody you hear on the government updates each day are talking about true data points. The more data you have, the better you can be at forecasting and understanding. And they're using expert scientists, people that understand about the issue. So from a security perspective, I believe we need to be more intelligence-led. And we use tangible data, but also using the skills of cyber professionals, either from peer groups, but also from service providers that you can partner with and achieve the same objectives, covering the threats that you know that you're going to be under, but also to cover this cyber skills gap as well. Use the people you know. Use providers out there to provide you a service that have already got these skills in place. So now you can focus on the commercial aspects of your business. And I think it's more about partnerships, the same way we are today as families. We're now learning to talk together.
Well, that actually takes me to one of my top tips for service providers. I absolutely agree with you. I think transparency, clarity and honesty is absolutely key. I would be saying to service providers, please communicate honestly with your customers and as clearly as possible at this time. They don't have time to jump through hoops. They're very stressed. In order to decrease the stress on your own staff and your own call centres, you need to really concentrate on how you're communicating with your customers at the moment. And they don't expect you to be perfect. If there is a problem, then just tell them there's a problem, that you're on it, and how long it's going to take you, if you know, to fix that problem, what you're doing about it. They don't expect you to pretend to be absolutely perfect. You know, they know that you're under stress. What's important for them to know is that it's getting sorted out. I think that you do need to think about the totality of your operation, and often poor performance in one area will actually create an avalanche effect into another area. So a good example of that is, if we send out our bills and we don't clearly communicate with our customers within that bill what provisions we've put in place for people that are struggling to afford them, what extra benefits we're giving them as free, just because we're trying to support them, so extra data, for example, then you are going to drive traffic to your call centres. So it's really important that you start to close these gaps up between your different departments and make sure that your entire organisation, for once, is working together properly. So if there's a fault, that you are communicating with your customers, that you're telling them there is a fault, but we're on it, we're sorting it out, you will get your services resumed as quickly as possible. If you need to prioritise things, then you tell them what the priorities are for you. Be generous and be supportive by all means, because what you're doing now is you're building your future customer base. People will remember how you behaved during this crisis. So, Kevin, earlier you were talking about the fact that, you know, there are a lot of scammers out there, there's a lot of phishing going on. Actually, reaching out to your customers, giving them advice, explaining what they should be aware of, telling them how you are going to communicate with them. So if it's a communication from us, you will see this, but you won't see that. We won't be doing this to you. And we will send you a text message, for example, but we won't send you an email. Or if we send you an email, we'll identify ourselves by doing this, that or the other. Take away some of the stress that people are under and this jungle that they're trying to sort of navigate through to get help. Make it as simple as possible for them. Help them to understand what's going on to decrease their stress. What would your top tips be then, Kevin?
The governor of New York said, if there is a break in the chain, it doesn't matter whether it's your department or somebody else's department, it means that it's not working correctly. So as a combined effort, everybody should be looking at a way to re-establish that link and make the chain fall again. And I think that's the thing that is happening everywhere around the world today. We're all helping each other out and we're all going that extra mile and saying, yes, it might not be my responsibility, but I'm going to help out to do it. And I think in business, we need to adopt a lot more of that, a more synergistic approach to things. So whether it's the provider or a partner that is reaching out to a customer, a consumer, if something's not working, work together to get it resolved. Help each other out on that. Everyone's doing a great job at the moment in very, very stressful times. So nothing that we talk about today is saying that people are not trying. All we're trying to do is give some pointers, some advice that people may have thought, yeah, I've done a lot of things, but I forgot to do that. And that was a good point.
In this interview, we're talking to Lightico's Jake Levant about how the current situation is changing businesses' requirements for remote digital interaction. So hi, Jake, and I'd like to welcome you into our Omnizine. For the benefit of our listeners, could you please introduce yourself and Lightico?
Sure, Teresa. Thanks for having me. I am working with a company called Lightico. Lightico provides a solution for large enterprises to manage digital interactions with their customers remotely. That means that they are able to manage e-signatures, forms, IDE, collections, payments remotely all through their mobile phone in a simplified fashion. This is particularly relevant in today's day and age, where businesses have had to manage with closure of front-facing shops and have to manage not only a remote workforce, but a remote customer base that can't access them through traditional channels.
Great, Jake. So thanks for joining us. What have you guys been seeing recent weeks? Clearly, you know, we're all working from home at the moment and trying to manage as best as we can. How are people changing their behaviour? How are enterprises adapting to that change in behaviour?
Well, I'll give you some insights. Actually, you can hear I'm working from home too. There are birds in the background, so pardon the noise. And we can see that our customer base, which spans hundreds of enterprise companies, have had to make dramatic shifts in that they have to not only make their operations remote, in that their staff and have to get all equipped so they can work from home, but customers are forcing a new dynamic. They no longer can go down and have a physical interaction. They no longer have the patience to go and produce 5 phone calls and 5 printouts and 5 scans to get something done. We've seen a dramatic drive to find ways to do things remotely, efficiently, and digitally.
So what does this mean for ICT companies then, Jake, do you think?
First and foremost, companies have had a huge reorganization. They've had to restaff and find new ways of providing the services. That means that they've had to equip their teams with all the relevant infrastructure so that they can work from home. That could be the computers, that could be the bandwidth, the VPNs, the security protocol. That's on a first level. The second is enabling them to manage transactions in a more efficient and remote fashion, things that they didn't have to do. So whereas before they could spend a lot of time on the phone with each customer, now they've had to find alternative ways of servicing them. It could be a self-service, it could be automation, or it could be an equipment such that they can handle more complex transactions simply in a time-efficient fashion. That could be ingesting of documents for a business customer to be able to sign a form and have it processed automatically. They've had to go to new digital tools quickly such that they can facilitate this upsurge in demand, also with a remote staff.
So what do you think this means for the ICT companies, Jake? What is this new dynamic that they need to look at?
The most obvious is that we've had a operational challenge, but ICT companies have had to understand that, okay, they need to have their staff equipped to work from different places. We also need to redimension a product. They have to have new applications that can now enable that staffing. They need to understand that consumers and their behaviors have changed dramatically over new device purchases. Things that used to be a rare purchase are now a mandatory. People are trying to find printers. This is something that was going out of fashion but has come back big. We've seen that people are scrambling to have VPNs. People are scrambling to have routers in their houses. We've seen increased service requirements where now you can have 3 or 4 people who are all in Zoom calls requiring new bandwidth at home. You have the basic of an organization, and then you have the implications on both the worker and the home audience.
So clearly there's a lot going on. I mean, things like you said, we maybe purchase once a year or even more rarely. All of a sudden, everybody wants to buy these things all at once and make changes to things all at once. So how do ICT companies support their business customers and consumers with these kind of requirements?
Yeah, it's a challenge. And we are staying very close to our customers and trying to help understand and see where we can be helpful. Obviously, some of the challenges that they're facing right now are closure of physical stores. We see that many of them don't have the infrastructure or the systems for easy transition to remote operations. We see a challenge of availability of workers where folks cannot come to work. They are restricted. We see that we have device challenges where folks at home who are trying to work from home may not have the infrastructure. We see that we have strains that are new, where people used to come in and have the retail branches and get things organized. Now everything goes to a call center. Everything goes to a website. Bill reviews, order configurations, insurance policies, all these different standard consumer behaviors are all challenged. And so we have an amassing of challenges. I have to say that thankfully we can see that telcos are in the rightful place as a core and critical infrastructure. Some of the early lessons from how our customers are managing, some of them have had to understandably delay their decisioning because of all the implications of working from home. Some of them are trying to hold on to the previous work methodology. They know that it's challenging and there's huge cost, risk, and effort associated with moving operations. Those who are making the move have really had to go into a different digital physical dynamic where they used to have a lot of front-facing staff. They've had to develop new work processes themselves. So the reliance on digital channels, we've had to find new digital answers, you know, replacing common practices of forms, signatures, and some of the things that we're dealing with in ID verifications. Whereas before we would have people who would come and and email, fax, these things are no longer adequate. Imagine just submission of a utility bill or for repayment calculation or signing off on those terms. We've seen a move to more digital interactions, both within the business community and within the consumers who need to sign up for new services.
It's really interesting there, Jake. We used to talk about this as its impact on the customer experience of dropping out of the digital experience when we force the customer to do some things physically. But now it's not just about digital experience. It's like critical that we can stay within the digital channel in this context. So it's a big driver for full digital transformation in a way, isn't it? And making things wholly digital.
You know, it's an unfortunate circumstance and it's a terrible event. But for an industry that's been constantly digitally transforming, let's say for decades, this may be one of the biggest catalysts of digital transformation. And it's in a time when we don't have an option. We cannot do things sloppily and with papers and with physical branches. We must go to remote. Now, in the first stages, we are just handling the bare minimum of operations. But as we get accustomed to a new dynamic, we need to find solutions, not just for having some bandwidth, but for efficient operations and for adding the services that we need to actually continue life. And so I think that there's a lot of terrible aspects about this. What we can say that one of the benefits that we're seeing is that this is a call to arms where businesses and consumers find the necessary tools. And many of those tools are digital to enable them to work remotely.
I think the interesting thing is that people are starting to realise that this isn't a temporary situation. This represents, like you've said, a very big change in behaviour. So people will adapt to this situation and it will have a long-lasting effect on how they want to then interact with businesses going forward.
Undoubtedly. There is obviously a significant fear right now that's driven these changes in behaviors, but we've seen that people are looking for this. You know, this is a long trend where people have been looking for digital solutions in many aspects of their life. So while this is a trigger point, we see that this is a trend. And so people want to have those digital touch points, not for everything. They still want a human touch on some, but for the more mundane transactions, they don't want to have to jump through all these hoops. This is going to be a point of no return where once we have digitized and fixed some of these slow and clumsy processes, consumers are not going to let us come back. So we came through it in a roundabout fashion, but now that we as an industry are here, we are going to benefit from this. And customers expect this. This has been the expectation for many other parts of our lives. As we buy books, consume digital media, sign up for most services, such as the same here in our business, in financial sphere, in telcos, where basic contracting and transactional should be done easily and can be done remotely. This is the ongoing expectation.
And this is not just me and you saying this. I mean, yes, it's wider in the industry, but you also did this study with consumers and they were telling you as well that they think there's going to be a long-lasting effect here. Can you give us some of the highlights from the study that you did, Jake?
We ran a survey of more than 1,000 consumers to understand a little bit more about how they're reacting as consumers to this new environment. But essentially, the results are astounding. So firstly, we understand that consumers are very concerned about their health and their financial future. And we see that they're reluctant to go out, to venture further than they need. Moreover, this is impacting their financial stability and the way they're thinking about consumption. We see that their consumption, where it happens, has to be digital and remote, and it's now more than ever. And they're more inclined to take more digital steps. So whereas before people would be reluctant to take a digital step, more than two-thirds have said, yes, they're trying new digital behaviors. We see that this is actually impacting consumers who are on the lower end of the income much more than those who are high income. They're much more fearful. And we see that people are going to make their decisions based on it. They're going to change their providers if they're not able to manage digitally and remotely. So I'll call it a few statistics. We'll see that nearly half of customers are unlikely to start a new sale if it means to go to a physical branch. They just won't do that. And I'm sure that has become more pronounced. We see that the individuals are concerned about any venturing, about any financial undertaking. And when they do take a service, that they're much more inclined to do it remotely. So 70% of consumers surveyed are using digital channels like apps, websites to get things done, much more now than what they were prior to the onset of Corona. We also see that consumers are just doing much of their remote work and remote errands. 73% of them are doing things remotely as opposed to physical. So they are actually taking action. And we're saying that they're now open to doing things that they never did before. So here we see that they are equipping themselves with a tool set definitively, and they're much more inclined to take steps. But the other side of this is that they also have expectations. They also expect their service providers to come towards them. 84% expect brands to find ways to maximize digital interactions, and in this instance, it's to keep them safe. So whereas before it was about convenience, now there's actually a more important layer to this. It's actually a mandatory or a health. It's become much more critical to why they must go digital.
So Jake, thanks so much for sharing all these insights with us. What are your top tips? If you had to boil this down, what would your top tips be for telcos and other businesses at this time?
Well, this would be a hierarchy. Obviously, there'll be an infrastructure as a first priority. And we see this amongst our customers as they have to have a maintenance of operations. And that is not just the stability of the operations, but we'll also say the stability of the workforce and a focus of, is everyone okay? And once we, if everyone's okay and taken care of, then are they equipped to be productive? So that's the second focus. The next is going to be a push to automation and self-serve, such that customers can find their solutions easier themselves. That will be obviously without coming to the physical location, but it could be through the standard touch points. It could be through the call center for the website, what have you. We need to be more attuned to what customers are looking for and what they need from us. And then when they do rely on those contact centers, we've seen huge spikes in the number of interactions amongst the contact centers. We need to provide simplified work methodologies for our contact center agents and advisors. They're in a different environment. We need to provide the digital tool set such that they can manage all of these complex interactions. The ones that used to be done on 3 or 4 phone calls now must be done on 1 phone call. The ones that used to be done partially on a call, partially on the website, and partially on a site visit must be done efficiently. Those would be my guiding points. Of course, companies like us are seeing a huge increase in demand for services because companies are realizing they must equip their teams to work remotely. So it's taking care of the basic infrastructure, making sure that the teams are enabled to work, and then enabling customers to self-serve, and where they do need the support of call center agents, the agents have the tool set to provide efficient and complete service remotely and digitally across all the spectrum. If it's the forms, the documentation, the identification, and so on and so forth.
So as we know, telecom service providers are at the forefront of helping businesses keep going during the coronavirus crisis and have had to deal with unprecedented spikes in demand. So I'm very pleased to welcome Thomas Neubauer and Dima Alkin from Teoco, who are going to talk to us about what's happening to the world's networks and what service providers can do to help cope with the challenges being thrown at them. Dima, can you please introduce yourself and your company?
Hi, Teresa. Thanks for having us here. So Teoco is a leading provider of network planning, optimization, assurance, and analytics solutions. We serve over 300 CSPs of all kinds globally, employing about 1,000 employees in roughly 20 offices worldwide, which are mostly empty, as you can imagine, with virtually all of Teoco working remotely from home. And our focus is really simple. We help CSPs to build and manage their networks more efficiently and profitably, while at the same time help them to deliver the high quality of service to their own customers. And in my role with Teoco, I focus on the service assurance part of our business, leading both the customer and industry-facing activities, as well as contributing to our product more roadmap and the innovation.
So I guess you're a very busy man at the moment, helping your customers get through this crisis. Thomas, can you tell us what you do at Teoco, please?
Yeah, hi Teresa. My name is Thomas Neubauer, and I'm responsible for business development and innovations in our RAN, so radio access business unit. As such, we are looking again on how to manage physical assets as well as operations of radio network, and also how we can help our customers with innovations, which are actually quite interesting these days during the crisis.
Great, guys. So can we start with you, Dima? What is Teoco seeing in terms of network demand across its customer base?
So people are reporting different kinds of numbers depending on the size of the network and the type of the network and the geography, obviously. More internet traffic, I think, overall in the 30 to 40% range, but nothing the current infrastructure cannot handle. We do see much more demand for upload speeds and the bandwidth because of all this video conferencing at home, obviously, and people working remotely. We see increase in VPN traffic with people connecting to their workplaces and enterprises and very large organizations working remotely. Much more video. Verizon reported around 75% increase in gaming traffic with all the kids and teenagers and their dads have all this spare time to spend at home. But again, as far as the network performance, so far, nothing that the current networks cannot handle, because typically good networks are engineered for peak traffic, not for average traffic. And company usually plan between a year and 2 years ahead, assuming in kind of 40% annual year-over-year growth. So as far as the network capacity, I think, as of now, we're fine.
Okay, and we're seeing the carriers working really hard to manage this increase in demand and maintain the quality of service. Have you got any advice for them, Dimar, in terms of things that they could do to squeeze the best possible experience out of their existing network assets?
So I think, you know, the problems that we are all observing so far, the network providers as well as consumers at home, right, that most of the performance issues are more on the application layer, right? The remote education platforms not being available for all the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of students working there, studying remotely, WebEx performance hiccups so here and there. But frankly, to be fair to applications providers, we don't know which portion of those problems is caused by the underlying infrastructure and network congestions, right? So I think, you know, there is the key to keep business going is the visibility. And that's, I think, what many people are lacking right now for various reasons, right? Of course, there are business continuity plans in place, but not every organization is built to work 100% remote. And second, there are people or parts of the organization that by definition cannot work remotely, right? Field technicians are called field technicians for a reason. So with less resources being available, you need to be able to prioritize your issues. You need to be able to understand what is causing potentially some network problems. So the key focus area right now is actually analytics. There are a lot of good data sets available in-house. There are a lot of very talented people, both on the carrier side as well as on the vendor side, like Teoco. And I think carriers should leverage this data and this talent to produce more insights on the spot. And we actually see some of our customers who kind of repurpose their big data and analytics teams from their long-term ongoing projects to providing much more of the ad hoc insights into some of the more burning problems. And we are offering customers to leverage our tool sets, obviously, and our skill set to help them.
And if they get these insights, Dima, what does that enable them to do once they've got the insights?
So first, they can respond faster to the problems that are already happening. The key to understanding the problem that is see the symptoms of the problem, right, in terms of the either network failures or the customers actually complaining about the performance. And the key to fixing it is, of course, understanding what's causing it. So some of those insights obviously are associated with identifying the right root cause for the underlying problem and then fixing it as much as possible. That's one example. Another use case, a lot of what's going on today as we speak is about being able to accurately forecast the network performance as well as recognize the anomalies. And there are a lot of anomalies today because the traffic is kind of unusual, right? We see a lot of unusual traffic patterns, some of them almost counterintuitive. For example, we see less LTE kind of mobile usage in some places because people are increasingly using their home Wi-Fi and their broadband internet access, right, which is actually spiking. So those are the kind of insights that are very, very practical and people can respond to once they have them.
So Thomas, if I can ask you a question, we know that operators are under a lot of pressure. You know, Dima's, you know, been talking about that. And at the same time, they're not immune to the virus either. So they have staff who are either ill or self-isolating. And this has a lot of impact on their business as well. I mean, that, you know, they have less staff in call centres, for example. They may have less engineers to help keeping their networks running and to fix faults that occur. So how are they managing with reduced staff, and what suggestions do you have in terms of how they can cope and deliver the best possible experience to their customers?
Right. Well, first of all, I think everybody around the world first time ever experienced how critical telecom infrastructure actually is, particularly when we have a lockdown situation. And so at Teoco, we really try to help our customers, the network operators, to keep the network operations stable and manageable. So what we see, in addition to what you already mentioned, we see also that many governments around the world are actually running short-time work initiatives. And apparently, cellular operators, some at least, are taking advantage of these programs also, meaning that they are also sending home people on short-time work, even those running the network operations. So what we do and what we help them with is, first of all, automation. So this is, it shows one of the key elements to actually automate the analysis, the monitoring of the physical network elements. And this is something that we, because the solutions, how we deploy them, they can actually do remotely. So there's a lot of capability out there. Secondly, we have at Teoco, we make sure that we can actually support our customers right now on a 24/7 basis in a remote way. So we have our distributed teams around the globe in, I think Dima mentioned it already, with about 20 offices around the world where we can actually help remotely our customers to help wherever needed. And thirdly, one of the learnings that we see is that because the operational needs to be automated, we expect that to be a key driver after the corona crisis to actually make sure that even more components can be automated and remotely managed in the future.
And I guess there's a great message there, Thomas, in terms of making the best use of your expert staff, putting them where they actually make a really good difference, and, you know, automating as much as possible, doing the heavy lifting with the automation.
Exactly. You know, digital transformation in a month, this is what we see globally happening today. And at Teoco, obviously, we are prepared for those things. And we want to make sure that we can help our customers to the maximum. And automation is absolutely key. We expect more automation to come with 5G anyway, because of the huge amount of data that we need to manage and the new huge amount of additional parameters that we need to handle. But today it is the opposite. We have the same amount of parameters. We just have exceptional situations, exceptional team sizes that can no longer actually work together on site, but remotely. But the effect is more or less the same.
So I think what we're seeing really is an acceleration of trends that we've probably already put in place, already identified in telecoms, but now they're getting a, you know, a boost, and we're having to move faster towards those goals because of the current situation. But you also work in the area of innovation at Teoco, don't you, Thomas? And, you know, you are responsible, I believe, for the drone business there. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, on the innovation side, what do you have at Teoco? What do you have for customers that they can maybe deploy and utilize in the current situation?
Well, acceleration of innovation is exactly the right point that you make here in this crisis. And drones are a phenomenal example for that. While if talking about that last year, we would have said this is all very futuristic to enable new application cases from public safety, emergency response, medical delivery, package delivery, inspection, all the way to drone taxis. But actually, the World Economic Forum already did a report about how drones helped in China to overcome some of the key challenges they had in the lockdown areas during this corona crisis. And the key applications that they actually used drones for are aerial spraying and disinfection, transport of blood samples and medicine in and out of the areas, as well as other critical deliveries such as food and other critical items. What we do with that is we help the ecosystems to actually automate such systems, drone systems and emergency systems, to be automated in future. That is where cellular network operations will be a very key part, so that you can actually remotely fly those drones and automate those systems. And we are providing them a solution called Airborne RF, where the telecom industry, together with the aviation safety industry, actually bridges the information gap. And that is where we help them. That is where we provide solutions to, again, automate emergency systems.
And I know another key use case that you've been working on as well with various service providers has been to assist, for example, police forces. And surveillance is a very topical thing at the moment to ensure that our populations are actually playing by the rules our governments have outlined, and, you know, and staying distant from one another, and preferably staying at home.
Exactly. And sadly, we have actually gotten some requests from some of the most heavily impacted countries in Europe over the last weeks to help actually police forces on what can they do to quickly set up remotely controlled drone systems, and how the telecom networks, which are necessary to provide the video feeds to the command centers, how we can help them. And we're in process of actually supporting them.
Brilliant. Thank you. You know, it's been really great talking to you guys. So, Dima, what are your top tips to service providers, if you can give them a message as to something that they could be doing now to help them maintain the experience on their networks? What would you advise them to be doing?
So I think, you know, at the moment, they probably need our help more than they need our advice. And as we mentioned, we have offered such help to many of our customers globally. But once this is behind us, I think, you know, the major focus area would be to accelerate the use of machine learning and artificial intelligence, as well as automate based on that, right? It will not only help their business on an ongoing basis and make it more efficient, but will also get them much better prepared for the next crisis.
I think that's great advice. I mean, there's two things here. There's coping in the short term, and then once we've got over this, actually then having that retrospective learning lessons, you know, identifying what worked and what didn't work, and, you know, moving forward as an industry. And Thomas, what would your advice be to service providers? What ideas would you like to give them?
Well, at the moment, to our customer base, please ask us for help when you need help, because we are set up and prepared to help you during this crisis. And afterwards, my advice is we are actually a great partner to help you automate operations and accelerate innovations that will help moving forward.
So today I'd like to welcome AJ Nash from Anomaly. Welcome to our OmniZine, AJ.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
AJ, can you begin by introducing yourself, telling us what you do, and tell us a little bit about Anomaly as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I'm the Director of Cyber Intelligence Strategy with Anomaly. So as far as my background, I have about 18 years in the U.S. government space. I'm a traditional intelligence analyst, counterterrorism and counterinsurgency and countering trafficking in persons and chasing war criminals and those kind of things. And then I spent about 5 years countering threats in cyber in the government. And my role has always been operational and strategic level, briefing senior leaders, writing papers for Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, the White House, that sort of thing. And I transitioned to the private sector about 5 years ago. And right now what I do is I either build intel programs or I consult with people about how their programs are going and how to improve upon them. And I do a lot of public speaking and the like. So that's my passion, is intelligence programs and trying to help make people safer and smarter as they go along. Anomaly is a platform company primarily. So founded about 6 years ago now, we were a threat stream originally. So that's the platform we're most well known for, the threat intelligence platform. Our company sort of invented the space. The goal is to have a unified approach in which we are able to bring in intelligence, make sense of it, take all this massive amounts of data and information, pull it together with some machine learning on top of it, so people can get everything in one place. And then operationalize that, whether that's sending some of the intelligence directly to their endpoints or to their security stack or working through a SOAR and connecting that with their internal knowledge of a SIEM function. So we're an end-to-end platform provider for operationalizing cyber intelligence.
Great. So you guys recently disclosed some threat information to the wider community, painting a bit of a picture of the threats that are present during the current coronavirus crisis. Can you tell us what you're seeing on the networks and any trends that are starting to escalate, AJ?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, COVID-19, obviously a massive problem worldwide from a medical standpoint. And you know, threat actors take advantage of large opportunities like this. It's just the nature of how they operate. And so coronavirus spawned off a bunch of large campaigns for phishing specifically. So we released a product to the public, not just for our paying customers. We thought this was important enough that we wanted everybody to have a lot of knowledge on this. So we did some indicators that we released, saw about 6,000 unique indicators of compromise. We identified 15 distinct campaigns, and I'm sure that number has grown, frankly, since then. Almost a dozen threat actors and groups. About 3.5 dozen malware families, and then matched it against the MITRE ATT&CK framework to make sense of it for people. So what we've identified is a large number of organizations that are taking advantage of coronavirus to set up custom phishing campaigns because people are panicked, people are nervous, people are desperate for information, and are more likely to let their guard down and click on links in items they otherwise might not click on. Which is exposing them to all sorts of malware and compromises.
And how can people use this kind of information that you've released? How can businesses use it to protect their staff and their clients, for example?
So the two items we released, we released a written paper, a threat bulletin. So that's certainly something that we would recommend that anybody in the cybersecurity space, whether they're hands-on keyboard or leadership, would want to take a read of. It's a better understanding of the threat landscape so they can see the totality of what's happening. For instance, one of the things that was in that paper that I found interesting was another vendor had reported a large uptick in domain registrations that were likely going to be used for phishing campaigns, which tells us not only have we seen a lot, but we're going to see a lot more in the future. So understanding the tactics, techniques, and procedures in that paper can allow organizations to start preparing for what's coming next. And then the other piece, again, with the spreadsheet we put out that had about 6,200 indicators, that can be immediately ingested for defenses. So for organizations that are in need of this intelligence, if they don't have the system set up or they don't have the vendors set up, we're providing thousands of indicators that have already been vetted and run through our machine learning algorithms. So they've been scored as confident. So organizations can take those and put them into their endpoints and into their security stack. Now, there's a slight disclaimer, of course. There's always a warranty disclaimer. We can't say they're 100% certain to all be hostile. Things do change in the environment over time. But adding those to block lists should immediately result in a safer environment.
And, you know, as you mentioned, everybody's changing their behavior. Everyone's working at home. The children are out of school. They're at home now. Businesses are trying to continue to operate as best they can in a more digital way. So there has been a big change in behavior, both for businesses and users. Do you think that this increases the threat profile? Is this something that the bad guys are able to take advantage of? You mentioned that perhaps people's skepticism about things might be a bit lower due to their fears at the moment. You know, what do you think is happening out there, and what should people be aware of?
Yeah, unfortunately, that is a downside of more teleworking, as it does create a larger footprint for organizations and a larger threat opportunity. I think a couple of things that companies and individuals need to take into account. You know, it's a great time to do some training, quite frankly, on cybersecurity and hygiene and just best practices. You know, adversaries take advantage of human frailties and human weaknesses. And right now, there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of insecurity in the world. We obviously have a rather significant medical issue we're dealing with globally. It's preoccupying us. So it's a good time to re-up some of our training, to remind people of what to look for in phishing, and to be really skeptical of emails, especially emails that are tied to the COVID-19 crisis right now, because people are going to let their guard down. So there's a concern there. Also, for organizations who didn't have large teleworking staff previously, it's an opportunity to take a look at some of our technologies, make sure we've updated all of our signatures and all of our concerns, and we're putting everybody on a VPN, and we're taking a look at what browsers are being used, for instance. This would be a great opportunity to take a look at some of the browser technologies that do isolation for organizations that are using, say, OWA for their email. There's an opportunity there to create another layer in which you can't be compromised even if you do click on the link. Our counter phishing technologies is a great opportunity to take a look at what we have and maybe what we need. But ultimately, it's going to come down to training and vigilance. Most problems we still have in cybersecurity do come down to human error. And at a time of increased crisis and stress, we're more likely to make mistakes. So that is what adversaries are going to look to take advantage of. So we need to remind our people to be more vigilant.
And that's great advice because, I think that the changes we're seeing now are not just a temporary state of affairs. Clearly, people and businesses are going to reevaluate how they operate. In the longer term, it's going to accelerate perhaps digitalization. So this is a good investment, isn't it, for the future, I think.
Absolutely. I think, unfortunately, it's hard to look at the bright side while we're in the middle of a crisis, but there's always good that comes out of every crisis. And I think we may find organizations that are more open to telework that weren't previously, because there are a lot of benefits to it in terms of the flexibility of a work schedule and the flexibility of how things get accomplished and a reduction in overhead costs for office space. And I think we're seeing that with universities now. I think when we're all done with this, we'll see more universities that are open to having classes online, which changes all sorts of opportunities. Then where somebody can go to university could change dramatically, or where they can work. If you're in the East Coast and the best person to hire was in Seattle previously, you might not be able to hire them if you couldn't do telework. Now maybe the number one talent is somebody you can go after. So I think there's certainly some opportunity to take a look strategically as companies of what can we learn from this experience. We've been forced into this, so what can we learn from this experience now and take forward, and how can we make benefit of this for our business long term after the crisis passes? Obviously, the number one concern now is people, keeping them healthy and safe, and of course keeping our technologies healthy and safe for the next step. But there certainly are business leaders that are going to take a look at this and use this as an opportunity to learn, because at some point we will move past this and we can gain from the experience. And make some use out of this, what seems to be senseless tragedy right now.
So that's great advice, I think, and good thoughts there, AJ. If people want to get hold of some of the stuff that you've put out, the paper and the other stuff that you put out, how can they get to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website, we're hosting it right now. It's at Anomaly, anomali.com/blog. And that'll take you to our blog. We have a couple of different items that we've published out there right now. And all people have to do is go in there, click on it, they have to fill out a small little form, and then we send it. I believe we send a link through an email right now for distribution. Really quick and easy. It's a good opportunity. They won't be inundated with sales calls and things like that. We understand the importance of giving this to people. So we'll probably follow up just to make sure it was useful. But I don't want people to be concerned about getting run over by salespersons. The idea here was to be good corporate citizens and to help people in a time of need, not to run them over with sales opportunities.
AJ, thank you for joining us today. And in summary, can you tell us, what are your top tips then? What are your key takeaways for business customers out there maybe who are, faced with this situation?
Yeah, I think the key pieces here are, if you don't have an intelligence program, it's a good time to take a look at that. We want to be able to make people safer and secure, not just our company, but all the companies in the industry. And it takes an investment in intelligence to be ahead of the curve in some cases, and when things like this happen, at least to be in a position to quickly react and bring in all the right data and intelligence, the information, bring it all together, right? So we want to make sure that people are doing that. And then training and vigilance are incredibly important things that we don't talk enough about, and we don't invest enough in. And then the last piece to take a look at is your data. Organizations are really loath to spend the time, money, and energy it takes to have proper configuration management databases and proper crown jewels assessments and proper data restoration, the disaster preparedness programs. Now is the time to look at all of those things. And frankly, now is the time to start asking for budget for these things. You know, because as the phishing campaigns continue to grow and as we see more ransomware, you know, those who aren't prepared for those events are going to have significant problems. So I'm hopeful that people are spinning up those opportunities now, because there will be another massive event in the world and there will be another opportunity to have adversaries who take the same activities they're taking now.